Day, February 23rd in the year 2011, and the City Council will come to order. Sue, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Our best wishes and sympathies to Carla and her family. I understand she's out on a family emergency, family leave. So, can you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Salzman? Leonard?
Here.
Quorum is present. We shall proceed.
Adams.
Here.
Very dramatic.
Quorum is present. We shall proceed starting with communications. Sue, can you please read the title for item number 173?
Request of Joe Rossi to address council regarding Portland Immigrant Statue Project.
Mr. Rossi, please come forward. Welcome. So for anyone that's new to the chamber, you just need to give us your first and last name. We are not interested in your address, just for your privacy. Please tell us if you're a lobbyist or authorized to represent another organization or business, and the three-minute countdown clock in front of everybody who testifies helps you keep track of time. Mr. Rossi.
Thank you. Joe Rossi. Member of the Park Rose community, Northeast Portland, and president of the Park Rose Community Foundation. I just want to introduce a project to you guys. It'll be really visible coming up this year. I'm really excited about it. It's the Portland Immigrant Statue Project. And we have a project where we can honor all of our immigrant citizens that have come to Portland and contributed to our business community and life in Portland. I'm really excited about this because everybody is a product of immigration. My family, your families, everybody here came from another country. And this is a really exciting project because what we have is we have something where we can honor everybody and hit everybody. And I like this project because the proximity of the Portland Airport, you can tell in the brochures you have where the project's located. People traveling to our community can see that their country that they came from is honored to for their contributions here. I'm excited because visiting dignitaries or people wanting to do business in our city can see a symbol where we appreciate the contributions from people from their country. So we're going to have a dedication ceremony October 1st. My job is to raise funds. It's all private monies. So I've got a lot of work cut out for me, but this is going to be my full-time volunteer job between now and October 1st. Right. And this also, I've got a lot of excitement from the Park Rose community, actually where the statue is going to be, because I've timed this to correspond with our 100th anniversary, which is really cool. So I got the whole community energized to put on a nice dedication ceremony, working with the superintendent at Parkhurst High School to really have a really nice celebration for our community and to offer this as a gift to our city of Portland.
And just for those listening in, the proposed location of the memorial and the statue is?
It's 98th and Sandy Boulevard, where Killingsworth and Sandy converge. It's the entry point to the Parkhurst community, which is right off the freeway in close proximity to the Portland International Airport.
Mr. Rossi, I noted in an article we pulled that you're working with ODOT on this and Shelley Romero, but they've at least raised a question about the location under their policy. So if for any reason this location was not viable when you're finished with your ODOT conversations, do you have a backup site that you're looking at?
I really don't, because everything from ODOT's been real positive. Actually, they have no issues with this site. The only issue was early on was our setbacks, but we've agreed to an 18-foot setback from the curb face. And so really that was the only issues I had to resolve with them. I'm open to other sites, but because everything's been so positive and we have such a highly visible site, pedestrian access, the bicycle trail right to the site, signal crosswalks, and all the traffic count, as you can see, that those roads have. I haven't revisited another site, okay, just because everything looks so good at this one.
And where did your family immigrate from? Which country?
I have two countries. I have Italy. My great-grandfather came from Italy in 1880 and farmed in Portland and Ladd's Addition before it was houses.
Oh, really?
And then once they built houses he bought a farm in near this site, actually, on Sandy Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And farm there. And Park Rose, it's a great historic location because a lot of immigrants came down Sandy Boulevard looking for work when they first came to this country. Mm-hmm. And so this is actually a historically accurate site. Portland International Airport was all pretty much immigrant farms. People came from other countries, not just Italy. My other half of the family came from Germany after the Depression, and things were really bad. So it's a common... I've done some research on a book I'm working on that's really fascinating, done a lot of interviews, and the one common theme is people leave a country because of adversity and come here, and we kind of forget where we came from. You know, I look back, there's a lot of adversity we came from. We actually lived in a two-room house with a dirt floor, you know, seven kids, and the oldest son came to America and started a new life here, and I'm a product of it, thank goodness, and honored to be here. So,
well, thank you. You've provided your leadership and efforts on a number of projects to make Portland and Park Rose a better place, and this is a great project. So, thank you for that. And would you mind stopping up and ask for Kerry Clark or his business card, because he can he's our arts and culture liaison, and I want to make sure that he's dialed into what you're doing.
Kerry Clark, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, Sue, can you please read the title for communications item number 174?
Request of Amelia Salvador to address council regarding Portland immigrant statute.
Good morning, welcome.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I'm here on behalf of the Portland immigrant statute as well. My name is Amelia Salvador. I am with the Park Rose Business Association as a board member. I am also the marketing director for the project here. And I'm here to just really share my support and share my enthusiasm here with you and the city of Portland about this groundbreaking project. I, too, as well, am a direct product of immigration. My parents immigrated from the Philippines here. And their first landing was in Park Rose, of course, which many immigrants do. They got their first hotel room there, their first apartment. Their first house is right there, one block away from the site. So truly, this project really hits home with all of us. We all are immigrants in some way or form. And really, it's here to preserve our heritage and our history of where we came from. And I really want to just show my support and honoring my parents and commemorating them and all immigrants for taking the courage to come here to the city of Portland. They could have gone anywhere, but they chose to come here to start their lives and begin their families. And I just really would like Portland to welcome home this statue and make home to it. So I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your good work. This is really impressive. And again, if you could talk to Kerry Clark, if you're not aware, you might qualify or you can apply for a grant with the Regional Arts and Cultural Council to help on the funding of it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is just one example of why the Park Rose Business Association was the Spirit of Portland Award winners this year. And thank you very much for all of your work. This is wonderful as a community-generated project, bringing together the Neighborhood Association, the Business Association, and the school district. So thank you very much for all of your work.
Thank you.
Thanks. Sue, can you please read communications item 175?
Request of Christopher Paulson to address council regarding boat moorage at public docks.
Mr. Paulson? Hi.
Good morning.
Welcome.
I appreciate you letting me come up here and speak. I've been down at River Place Marina with my sailboat, and I've been chased off of there after their 72-hour limit by the harbor master and by the park rangers. And yet there's one boat in question that's been there since August on the public dock, but yet he can stay for 6 months while everybody else gets shooed away. And I was just, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but I thought I'd bring it to your attention.
Mr. Paulson, as the Parks Commissioner, I have jurisdiction over the dock and the issue, and we've been involved in a couple of similar issues there and in another dock. And I appreciate you coming and testifying, and it would be enormously helpful to me if you stopped at my office before you left.
Okay.
Ask for Danielle Ledesma and just gave her your contact information, and we will keep you advised as to the steps we're taking to address
okay.
the problem.
That's all I wanted to do is bring this to your attention.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Sue, can you please read communications item number 176?
Request of David Parsons to address council regarding selective enforcement on public docks in Portland.
Mr. Parsons?
Is he here? He's not here.
Okay. That gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda?
I do.
Okay, which one?
185.
185. Any other items to pull from the consent agenda? If not, Sue, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Moves us to the time certain. Can you please read the title for resolution item number 177?
Accept the 2010-11 State of the City Preservation Report from the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Thank you. Tim Heron, Art DeMaro, were you going to come forward and make a...
Tim Heron, BDS. It's my pleasure to introduce the chair and the vice chair of the Landmarks Commission, who are going to present a short presentation on the resolution.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Art DeMuro, chair of the Landmarks Commission, and
I'm Carrie Richter, the vice chair of the Portland Landmarks Commission.
We're grateful for you allocating this time. We're going to review our report with you, and as you never fail to do, please interrupt us with interesting questions and any discussion at any point during the report. The commission met 17 times during 2010 and conducted a retreat just a month ago. We received 12 briefings addressing a broad spectrum of topics, including a PSU framework plan, Irvington Historic District, Portland Public Schools historic assessment, historic Portland Parks system, Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Project, Portland Luz, and others. There were four Type 3 historic design reviews that included 2211 Park Place, the Oddfellows Hall, the Maiden Oregon sign, and the new Blanche House of Hospitality. Additionally, there were two Type 2 cases, both in Ladd's Edition, one Type 4, the Kiernan Building, three design advice requests, and staff rendered 49 Type 2 decisions. There were eight National Register nominations reviewed. While the economic shift has reduced our design review applications, it should be noted that the ratio of design review cases to historic design review cases has reduced from 3-1 to less than 2-1. This reflects the growing emphasis on rehabilitation versus new construction throughout the city.
Could you repeat that again, Art?
Sure. The point was that the ratio of design review cases to historic design review cases has reduced from 3-1 to less than 2-1. So, and we're certainly seeing this in the development world as well. Well, the emphasis has really moved to rehab versus new construction.
We're going to identify some of our historic preservation priorities. The first one is the Portland Plan. Bureau of Planning Services planners developing the Portland Plan have incorporated protection of historic resources by designating both contributing landmarks and historic districts as constraints in the buildable lands inventory. In other words, as planners consider zoned capacity of building property in determining potential growth and expanded density within our city, they have acknowledged that protection of historic resources will require constrained growth in these relatively small pockets within the city. The Landmarks Commission fully supports that approach. Even with the approval of Irvington Neighborhood as a National Register District, National Register districts, and individually listed properties comprise only 4.4% of the city's area. Therefore, concentrating density outside historic districts encourages infill and minimizes sprawl, while at the same time maximizing protection of the character-defining massing and scale that is so critical to these protected areas. The chair of the Landmarks Commission, our esteemed leader, is serving as the Mayor's Portland Plan Advisory Group to help focus attention on preservation-related matters as this plan moves forward.
Next, historic resource inventory. While a significant accomplishment at the time, the 1984 HRI is now out of date and in need of revision. Why now? Projected population growth and anticipated housing demands within Portland are anticipated to grow at significant levels over the next two decades. To accommodate this growth, increases in density will inevitably cause redevelopment throughout Portland's neighborhoods, potentially affecting hundreds of historic resources in the process. Consider this. Even in the economic downturn, jurisdictions across Oregon, such as West Lynn, Lake Oswego, Oregon City, Hillsboro, and Cottage Grove, and the United States, the largest effort being in Los Angeles, are revising their historic resource surveys as a springboard for economic development. Indeed, economic development can actually be spurred by a historic resource survey because it can provide city, state, and federal agencies such as the Port, PBOT, TriMet, PPS, Parks and Rec, Water Bureau, PDC, ODOT, FTA, and private developers comprehensive resource information to better anticipate and plan projects around historic resources identified during the HRI. Agencies and developers currently spend thousands of dollars each year on project-specific cultural resource surveys, but this information is scattered, not comprehensive, and can complicate project scheduling if surprises are found late in the planning process. Another point is expanding access and opportunities for local, state, and federal incentives and grants for historic preservation activities. Provide city planners with comprehensive historic resource information that can be integrated with larger planning initiatives such as the Portland Plan, thus reducing the potential for zoning and project conflicts and thereby facilitating growth. Better anticipate the potential for future historic districts. Provide the city's downtown and neighborhood residents and commercial enterprises with renewed sense of place and cultural identity. Provide city neighborhoods with resource information for use in neighborhood improvement projects and educational materials. Recent survey efforts in Portland have been funded by city funds, institutional efforts, and neighborhood associations. These projects included the East Portland Historic Survey Project, that surveyed mid-century residential subdivisions developed in the 40s to 60s beyond 82nd Street, paid for by city and SHPO. Publicly owned properties focused on Portland parks, paid for by the city, PSU Architectural Survey, an architectural survey of campus buildings, paid for by PSU, Portland Public School Survey, relevant for the upcoming bond levy, another institutionally paid for survey, Irvington Neighborhood Association Survey and National Register nomination, paid for by the neighborhood, Buckman Neighborhood Architectural Survey and National Register nomination in process, paid for by the neighborhood, and the Brooklyn neighborhood completed quite a lot of survey work not long ago, also privately funded. A multi-year phased comprehensive revision of the HRI would be initially focused on areas with the greatest potential for population growth and redevelopment. The HLC would like to partner with other city agencies to pool resources and seek additional private, state, and federal matching funds for the HRI revision. A citywide survey project would potentially range between $2.5 to $3 million, but costs could be balanced by developing strategic relationships with funding institutions, agencies, neighborhood groups, and historians, preservation nonprofit organizations, consultants, and city agency staff. Costs would also be spread out over a period of years to balance expenditures across budget cycles. If the council is interested, the HLC will develop a feasibility study over the next year to further develop funding sources and strategic partnerships, program administration, and project management. The Landmarks Commission asks for your support for this effort by incorporating it into future budgets and strategic planning.
Next topic is historic districts. The first district we want to talk a little bit about is Skidmore Old Town. It has been 28 months since we forwarded to you our proposed design guidelines and cast iron resolution for approval, and cases continue to be presented to us that must be reviewed in accordance with the woefully antiquated guidelines. We just heard another this month. It is regretful that this prior investment of public time and resources generated documents that are the paradigm for all historic district review guidelines in the city, yet they sit on a shelf unadopted. To be direct, the controversy blockading the adoption of the design guidelines and the cast iron resolution is all centered around the zoning ordinance, which calls for inappropriate height and scale in our national landmark district. Therefore, in order to move the process forward, the Landmarks Commission will be seeking the support of both the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the Design Commission, asking the Council to adopt the Skidmore Old Town Historic Guidelines and Cast Iron Resolution and deferring any decision on zoning matters to the citywide context of the Portland Plan and the Central City 2035. Again, we want to mention Item 2, Antiquated Design Guidelines. There remain other historic design district design guidelines that are inadequate in which to perform fair and predictable design reviews. The standards for review are low, vague, and often not currently reflective of neighborhood interests. Please consider allocating resources for such work in the districts of Lair Hill, Yam Hill, Ladd's Addition, East Portland Grand Avenue, and the 13th Avenue Historic District. You should know this last retreat, we've decided to create a work committee to get together to talk about whether or not we could make a master set of design guidelines that would apply citywide. They would be general principles, and then we could come out with more detailed guidelines that would deal with particular unique characters of the district, thereby consolidating our efforts.
It's sort of my working understanding. I just want to check in that that would require us to change to get a long sought-after change in state law, or no?
No, we wouldn't need to change the state law to revise the design guidelines.
But they wouldn't apply outside of the design review
areas. They would only apply within the historic districts into landmarks, just like they do now.
Sorry. Okay. I thought you were... So you're saying citywide and all historic and landmark designated areas.
We need to upgrade our guidelines. And what we're trying to do is consolidate the effort instead of having a separate set for each district like we do now. We're trying to... Exploring the idea of consolidating that.
That makes sense.
Number four, public. Please.
Can that be done independently of the historic resource inventory?
Yes. Oh. We're trying to do. We would like to do both.
Right. Okay.
Number four, public commission cooperation. One of our goals for 2010 was to promote improved communication between the Landmarks Commission, Design Commission, and Planning Commission, as we are being presented more and more matters that overlap the interests of the separate commissions. We are pleased to report that code changes were implemented that deleted the unmanageable provision for common members on multiple commissions. Instead, the chairs of all three commissions now meet quarterly to update each other on matters before each and discuss topics that are of common concerns. You recently saw a tangible result when all three commissions testified before you on the city's tree policies.
Next, the threatened landmark list. Last year, we reported 12 different historic resources that were on our threatened landmark list. We can happily report that of those, four of them are being actively addressed. First, Union Station, PDC, PNC Construction and Architectural Resources Group have teamed for a large-scale rehabilitation to be completed this year. Washington High School, PPS, is concluding a month-long process to select a buyer and redeveloper for this historically significant property so that it is critical to the Buckman neighborhood and our city. Third, Northwest Cultural Center. The Northwest Children's Theater, Waterleaf Architecture, and Schomer Construction have teamed and are exploring a rehabilitation plan for this Alphabet District landmark. The 511 building, PNCA has selected a project manager and had begun its planning process for rehabilitation of this historic post office on the North Park blocks.
You know, it's worth noting that the 511 building project, which is very exciting, may be delayed a little bit now in light of the council's decision we're about to finalize on the land use issues with the ICE facility in South Waterfront. So if there's a delay in in that project, it probably delays this project.
Right.
I think that will maybe buy them some additional fundraising time anyway, which might be of assistance, yes.
The resources that remain of serious concern are, one, Skidmore Old Town. Proposed zoning code amendments that remain under consideration by council threaten the loss of national landmark designation for our city's most important historic commercial district. Number two, Centennial Mills. In addition to the lack of visible progress on this project, we remain concerned about the lack of stabilization being performed to preclude this complex's further deterioration. PDC has informed us that they anticipate finalizing a DDA this year and beginning adaptive reuse construction in 2012, but rumors sustain our concerns. Number three, Memorial Coliseum. The National Register protection offers short-term relief, but only a commitment of a long-term use can justify the necessary investment to restore and renovate our newest landmark. Number four, Portland Public Schools. The bond levy success would certainly push this pool of city treasures off our list. Item five, Morris Marks House Story Court Apartments. This is at 1134 Southwest 12th Avenue. Low-scale buildings in an area zoned for high-rises. Discussions of possible relocation have begun. Item six, the U.S. Customs House. GSA has identified a local property management firm which intends to acquire and relocate its offices there. We hope this leads to a reinvestment into this property and the availability of it to the public. Brooklyn Roundhouse and Locomotives. While progress is being made since the council approved a new location for our historic locomotives, the roundhouse at Southeast 18th and Holgate remains a concern, as will the locomotives until funding is secured. Item 8, Portland Gas and Coke Building. A 1910 icon on St. Helens Highway south of St. John's Bridge is a Superfund site.
Number 6. The 2010 Landmarks Historic Preservation Successes that we would like to note. Tops on the list is the Made in Oregon sign, or Portland, Oregon sign now, final change, and now public stewardship.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay,
amen. Campbell Memorial, now protected by the National Register. The Eon Building, or Rose Festival Office, rehabilitated and protected by the National Register. Bull Run Lake Cabins, three log cabins built in 1914. Water Bureau restoration is ongoing. And I think we certainly should give Commissioner Leonard a special nod related to the cabins and the Yon Building, as well as the Campbell Memorial.
Never taken any grief for those.
No. And then finally, the Irvington neighborhood has been accepted by the Keeper of the National Register and is officially a National Register district.
I believe the Campbell Memorial is a parks facility.
Oh,
and
I'm happy to give Randy credit for everything in the report, but we'll share credit on that.
Be careful what you ask for. It needs a lot of work. So.
Thank you for the correction.
Next, we want to talk a little bit about solar panels and conservation districts. This past year, the Historic Landmarks Commission considered a series of green bundle amendments to the city code known as RECAP 5, including exempting eco-roofs and roof-mounted solar panels from design review, as well as setting standards for the location of water cisterns and wind turbines. Before adoption of RECAP 5, the installation of a roof-mounted solar array in historic districts required discretionary review by either city staff or the Landmarks Commission. In conservation districts, rather than being labeled as mechanical equipment and subject to screening, solar installs were classified by building permit staff as exempt from review. After adoption of RECAP 5, the installation of solar panels in both historic districts on flat roofs with a parapet and panels on sloped roofs where the panels face rear property lines and were not visible were exempted from discretionary review. So we made some situations more easy to get approvals. The Landmarks Commission did require review of proposals for street-facing solar panels in both historic districts and conservation districts in order to identify those situations where such alterations would not have a negative effect on the integrity of the district. After City Council adopted the Landmarks Commission recommendations, solar industry stakeholders objected to the requirement of review for street-facing solar panel installations. Our thanks to the Mayor's Office, who then invited the Landmarks Commission to directly address these concerns with planning staff, solar advocates, and solar energy providers, Susan Anderson, and individual council members, and the public. We were able to do a little education that way, and it was a great opportunity. This said, the solar panel discussions illuminated that the real rub relates to historic design review mandated in conservation districts. Development in the city's six conservation districts, including Elliott, Kenton, Mississippi, Piedmont, Russell, and Woodlawn, may occur either through discretionary review by city staff or ministerial approval through compliance with a clear and objective series of design standards approved by the Design Commission, dictating roof pitch, materials, window openings, and the like. The Landmarks Commission understands that these conservation districts were created in 1993 as much as a social, cultural, and economic driver as for the identification of historic structures that work together to tell a story of an era gone by. It is possible that infill development in these areas over time has eroded the historic fabric so far that these areas are no longer suitable for protection, or that review powers should switch to the Design Commission, where a standard of aesthetics could be assured without regard to impacts to the resources. The only way to make informed decisions in this regard would be to inventory the building stock in these areas to determine if the conservation district classification in these areas should remain. If some of these districts should be converted to National Registered districts and receive greater protections, or if some of these districts should be wholly declassified. Again, the Landmarks Commission renews its request for funding so that this inventory can be completed.
Number 8, Portland Development Commission. The Landmarks Commission feels that our communication links with the city's Urban Renewal Agency, the PDC, needs improvement. PDC interfaces so actively with public historic resources that we feel that a stronger bond would facilitate communication and help influence PDC's planning so as to better ensure that PDC-supported projects can be supported at the HLC level. Certainly, PDC has reached out on multiple occasions, such as number one, early involvement in the Central City West Side URA study. HLC was asked to identify historic resources that might be positively impacted by inclusion. Two, Landmarks Commission representatives have been asked to participate in the RFI selection committees, the Ankeny Burnside Project, and sustainability committees. And three, PDC provided a Centennial Mills briefing recently. Areas where improvement can be made are, first, early Landmarks Commission involvement in PDC-financed project planning that is within historic district boundaries would be beneficial. A prime example is Japantown Chinatown, where high-profile projects like Uwajimaya and Blanchet House have been proposed and preliminarily planned, but may be in conflict with historic resource protections.
Is there a new issue involving Blanchet House that we haven't already addressed?
No, that, as a matter of fact, Commissioner, that's going through review process right now and is set for a vote on the 28th by the Commission.
So that's what you're referring to? Okay.
It related really more to the Kiernan demolition.
Okay.
It was the primary reference.
Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification.
And what about Uwajimaya? What's the issue there?
I'll use this as an example. The project is obviously a substantial full block development in a historic district, and it's been planned in many ways. It has been funded. There's been neighborhood organization, and Portland Development Commission has never come before Landmarks once to present the plan. So they're very well, and I don't even know the details of it. But
the status, to use this opportunity for a little bit of back and forth, is we don't have a funded project. So we don't have a design. But that doesn't mean that we couldn't have early communications about it.
Here's the concern there is that there certainly have sketches that have been done that community has commented on. And so there's a certain amount of support or enthusiasm that's generated. but it could be a plan that might not be acceptable at all to Landmarks Commission. So what we're concerned about is this going very far down the road. Everyone jumps on board. Maybe funding is then allocated or whatever, and then Landmarks sees it at the very end, and there's a tremendous amount of pressure put on Landmarks to approve it. Otherwise, we're the blockade to, you know, this popularly supported project.
I think that's if there's a way to have informal discussions, I think that would be useful. Honestly, the swings and money and otherwise, whatever sketches we put out there might or might not move forward.
Mr. Mayor, sometimes what will happen is staff will be entertaining a project like that, and they'll invite even just the leadership of Landmarks to meet with representatives and just chat conversationally.
Let's make that happen.
Thank you.
Yep.
Investment and maintenance of some PDC-owned historic resources has been sparse. We believe the PDC is not modeling the type of care that a fragile resource should receive. We worry about potential precedents for cases of demolition by neglect. Consideration of a change in PDC policy would preclude the expenditure of public funds to demolish a designated historic resource. Ensuring that a Landmarks Commission representative is appointed to committees investigating options for a historic resource, such as Memorial Coliseum. We believe a good start would be a request from the mayor for a meeting between Landmarks Commission representatives, PDC representatives, and a liaison from the mayor's office to explore options for improvement in these areas. Hint, hint.
I think it's a great idea.
Oh, thank you, Mayor.
We'll make it happen.
Finally, preservation connections. The Landmarks Commission has begun fulfilling a 2010 goal of increased communication with organizations supportive of its mission. Representatives of the Bosco Milligan Foundation, Historic Preservation League of Oregon, State Historic Preservation Office, and the AIA Historic Resources Committee, and we had a report from Travel Portland, have attended Landmarks Commission hearings to present organizational updates or opinions on topics of common concern. Conversely, we have attended events sponsored by them. Challenging issues have drawn all to communicate regularly to facilitate communication and to coalesce support for common causes. Thank you.
Mayor, I have a couple, if I could.
Sure.
First, thank you for an excellent report.
Thank you.
I think this is your second annual?
Third annual. That qualifies us as an institution.
Time is flying by. Art, another piece of good news that probably was so late in the day that it didn't make your report is that the council last week appropriated about $400,000 to do some exterior work on the Pittock Mansion. And that's because the mayor set aside $2.4 million for capital projects, and then the council agreed to spend that money. So that's good news for Pittock, which is one of our great landmarks.
Absolutely.
And the second, I wanted to ask you a question. Do you have any updated information on the status of the landmark process involving the Halperin fountain sequence?
No, I think actually Tim may know the answer to that.
Tim Herron, BDS. No.
Well, wrong again.
You're a lot of help.
I guess it probably the short answer is it's still in progress.
Mm-hmm. We've invited Jeff and Randy to come before Landmarks and update us, and I think they've just not gotten to that point.
So just to close the loop with you, we've got the application for landmark status. We've got the three relevant bureaus, water, transportation, parks, all agreeing to collaborate. We've got the Halperin Conservancy willing to step up and engage in some fundraising to help us with some capital work. And the mayor has proposed, at least preliminarily, the creation of a sub-district which would capture the history and vitality of the fountain area. So that should be an exciting thing going forward, assuming we get the designation.
It would be no surprise to you. We would enthusiastically welcome that.
I had a couple questions. Your statement that consideration of a change in PDC policy could preclude the expenditure of funds to demolish historic resources. This is something on your wish list, am I understanding?
That is, it's something we would, we've proposed before the West Side URA subcommittee, and we'd like to suggest again to PDC to consider.
And then I was also, I'm always very curious about the Portland Gas and Coke building, the 1910 landmark we all see as we're driving north on Highway 30.
Going to Salvia Island to get our pumpkins. Yes.
Scary building.
Yep. Yeah, scary building. So what does the Landmarks Commission, what would you like to see happen? I mean, it's sitting in the middle of a Superfund site, right?
It is. Really, Commissioner, our point is, I mean, it's a difficult project. It's just a significant building that we would like to see dealt with. But if you're asking for a program to suggest,
is there any maintenance of it ongoing, or is it just...
I don't know. I placed a call not long ago to, is it PGE that... I beg your pardon. Anyway, and I there was no interest in pursuing it, or maybe no course. Maybe it's worth a call to them again to see. I mean, maybe there's some sort of federal funds available that might help. I don't know. We're just waving the flag, but no, we don't have a solution.
And I'm assuming it's a big building. It's probably made of unreinforced masonry. I'm assuming moving it is probably not logistically feasible.
I don't know. I'll tell you what, we'll make a call and look into it.
It's a great building. I mean, great looking building from the outside anyway.
It is. Thanks for bringing attention to it.
Other council discussion? So we'll work on getting that roundtable discussion with PDC and Randy's office and Bureau of Development Services.
We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Are we accepting the report? Or?
We're about to vote on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a resolution, I think. So, is there anyone here that wishes to thank you?
Thank you.
Your great work and a really fantastic presentation. I'm glad you're coming to council over here.
Thanks so much.
People signed up?
Fred Leeson.
A historian in his own right, published author. What's the name of your book, Fred?
Oh, that was Rose City Justice. That was a long time ago.
And can it be purchased on Amazon?
I don't know. Okay. I have no idea. I haven't tried to purchase it.
just trying to help you out here.
That's right. Appreciate the plug. I'm here today as chair of the Bosco Milligan Foundation. I wanted to thank Art DeMuro and the Landmarks Commission for all of the work they do for you and for the city of Portland. I really also appreciate the quality of the planning staff, most of whom are in this room today. In just less than 90 seconds, I want to reinforce the need for the historic inventory. I think that the digital tools we have today that we did not have 30 years ago can make that process a lot faster and maybe less expensive than people think it is. Hope that those can be explored. Just in the past year, Bosco Milligan Foundation has been very active and actually did the legwork on David Campbell, the Fireman's Memorial. We are working now with the citizens that are interested in the Buckman Historic District. The organization as such was not involved in the Irvington Historic District, but many of our board members and most active members of Bosco Milligan were involved in that magnificent piece of research, if you ever get a chance to look at it. We continue to believe that great cities respect respect the past and preserve the past as they move forward. We think Portland can be one of those great cities. We also believe that there's a growing body of evidence that suggests that the greenest possible building that you can have, the most sustainable possible building, is the old building that you renovate and restore and reuse rather than tear down and build new. We are working with your planning staff on the Portland plan to try and make sure that those values are incorporated in that plan. And when that plan comes to you, I'm sure we will be back to make that point again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Fred. Anyone else wish to testify on this matter? Sue, can you please call the vote?
Fritz.
Thank you very much for this report, for the good staff work, and certainly for all of the diligent volunteer work. It's amazing that we have citizens who are willing to contribute your time, talents, to a venture such as the Landmarks Commission and also doing this annual report. Thank you very much. I do highlight also one of the pieces that we did get done this past year, which is the Portland State University inventory, and thank you to Carrie for your assistance on that. That was something that we followed up from last year. And really appreciate all of the work. As I've said before, if we don't preserve our historic landmarks, there won't be any. If we don't start preserving some of the things that are 50 years old, they're not going to be 100 years old. So I very much appreciate what you do. Aye.
Fish.
You know, across from the Director Park is the Admiral Apartments, which I believe has a plaque announcing that it is a historic landmark. And as my colleagues know, because they've supported substantial city investments in that building, it has been brought back to its old glory. It is an absolutely beautiful building. It also houses some of the oldest, poorest, and most disabled citizens in our community right there in the middle of downtown in a beautiful building that is an asset to the downtown scene. So preserving these buildings is not only the right thing to do, but it greatly enhances the urban experience, and in this case provides a wonderful address for people that are otherwise used to being priced out of the market. It's a win-win. So thanks for an excellent report, your third annual report. And I guess they keep getting better. And we appreciate your vigilance in addressing these issues. Aye.
Saltzman.
I want to thank the Landmarks Commission for your good work, your no punches pulled reports. And we appreciate it. Thanks. Aye.
Bennard.
I appreciated the report Carrie and Art gave, but I want to point out that the one project Art mentioned that was significant, the Portland, Oregon sign, wouldn't have happened without him and his, what I learned, are excellent negotiating skills combined with generosity, which is a powerful combination. Aye.
Adams.
I would echo Commissioner Leonard's comment. Art, thank you. Thanks to the entire commission and Tim and the team, Randy's office and his team. And just want to reiterate my thanks to the federal government for resources that have gone into the Union Station. As we've opened it up and sought to make it better and restore it, we have found that it really needed the help. It's been fascinating. So thanks. Aye. So approved. Sue, can you please read the title for Time Certain at 10:15, an ordinance, emergency ordinance.
Item
178.
178, authorized $54,302 in grant agreements for the East Portland Neighborhood Office 2010-11 East Portland Action Plan Grants Program.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. And if I can have the community representatives come forward, that'd be great. The East Portland Action Plan is an exciting initiative that's been a true partnership between the city and the community for 2 years now. 268 action items were developed by the community in the East Portland Action Plan, which the council adopted shortly after I came on board in 2009. This provides guidance and direction to public agencies, nonprofit organizations, businesses, and individuals to address the opportunities and challenges facing East Portland. I acknowledge and thank the great community leadership that has guided this effort, with some 35 members active, co-chaired by Arlene Kimura and Katie Larcel. It's exciting to have the opportunity to approve the third year of East Portland Action Plan small grants that help implement the actions identified in this plan. And I note that the East Portland was the only area of the city that did not have cuts in its neighborhood action grants last year. And I appreciate the council fulfilling our commitment to East Portland by funding it in the 2010 and 11 budget at a time when all other areas of the city did not receive the same allocation of neighborhood action grants. I am very happy to present to you this package for this $54,000 in taxpayers' money that's going to support specific projects which will greatly benefit the community in East Portland and therefore our whole community. And here to tell us about what you're going to be doing are Larry Coton and John Torino. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you for making time on your busy agenda to hear this brief report on the small-medium grants award portion of the East Portland Action Plan. It's our privilege to provide this report on behalf of the committee. As you may recall, the East Portland Action Plan has been funded with about $500,000 for this fiscal year, And of that total, $50,000 has been allocated to grants for community-based organizations to support projects that adhere to the EPAP prioritization criteria that were established by the working group. The main idea was and continues to be to support low-cost, high-impact, high-visibility projects across as much of East Portland as possible, and to spread these grants as appropriate amongst as many cultural, language, and project-type interests as possible. The Grant Award Committee, consisting of 7 members appointed by the EPAP Working Group and assisted by our able advocate, Lori Winograd, uses independently arrived at numerical scores to draw up an initial ranking of the grant applications. We then hold meetings, which thankfully have so far avoided fisticuffs, to discuss our ratings, rank the finalists, and through compromise and negotiation, arrive at a consensus on which grants to award.
Okay, as we consider our 2011 grant awards, I want to take a moment to review what our 2009-2010 awardees have accomplished. So first, a few numbers here. So $50,000 in grants for the previous year, we went to 18 different projects, and that represented about half of the projects that submitted requests for funding. But ultimately, we were only able to fund 22% of the total in dollars that were requested. But on this slide here in particular, take a look at the last two bullet points, because our $50,000 leveraged an additional $345,000 worth of donated money, materials, and volunteer time. So that's almost a 7-to-1 return on our investment, and we think that in and of itself is a pretty huge success. The funded projects can be loosely grouped, as you see here, almost $12,000 to healthy living and food security projects, $2,000 to transit-oriented projects, $9,240 to projects designed to build community, over $14,000 specifically earmarked to youth-related projects, and $12,500 awarded to culturally and language-specific programs. So there's our numbers, but enough of that. Let's get to the good stuff here, because here's a few examples of exactly the kind of things that got done in the 2009-2010 grant cycle. So first off here, you see the cover of the Zomi Association handbook. So they asked for funding to produce textbooks and train tutors to teach their language to the local Zomi community. So we gave them $1,000. They leveraged an additional $3,000 from Multnomah County, and they're able to produce a handbook that's used not only here to teach the Zomi language, but they use it internationally now as well. So great bang for our buck there for sure.
Can you tell me who are the Zoli? Or
the Zomi? I think Laura can probably answer that better than I can.
Yes, the Zomi are village people that came from Burma-Nepal border. They have been in refugee camps for 19 years and were recently moved as new Portlanders to this area. The goal of this grant was identified within the East Portland Action Plan as gang prevention in terms of supporting new community members to have parents who perhaps don't speak English while children are learning it to be leaders in their home, in their families, in their community by sharing their culture and their language.
Thank you.
Graffiti, as we know, has been a persistent and growing problem in East Portland, and our grant award there has been able to turn this scene here into this scene here. So we've had over the last year over 70 volunteers and over 1,000 graffiti reports compiled as a result of our grant award for East Portland graffiti cleanup. And then lastly, I got two more. Our grants we've discovered have brought people together in some ways that we didn't quite expect as well. The Northwest Housing Alternatives applied for a grant to produce a multicultural share fair, and we saw an opportunity for them to partner with the 2010 East Portland Exposition. So we suggested they work together, and the outcome was wildly successful, with the multicultural fair becoming a major part of the EPO Expo and reaching many more people than they had hoped. And lastly, here we go. Look at this picture, these two cute kids. So here we have some kids taking advantage of swimming lessons offered at David Douglas High School, and one of our grants supported that. But I want to let the head instructor's words speak for themselves here. This is from her grant report. And she wrote, "Once the kids who qualify for the grant check in, they go through the locker room and enter the pool, and no one knows the difference." And she's speaking there too about kids that otherwise wouldn't be able to participate because of lack of funding. "They climb in, hang on to instructors, splash and giggle, jump off the diving board for the very first time, overcome their fears, and smile when they get their face in the water or make it to the other side of the pool, just like any other kid. Would these parents have the option to take $45 from their rent, food, or utilities budget to spend on swim lessons? And, of course, we know the answer. That's probably not. So there you go. No kid should have to grow up scared of the water because their parents can't afford to put them in swimming lessons. So the kind of grants that we're doing here help take away some of those economic barriers. And there you go. I'll turn it back over to John. So these are some examples from the prior year's grant successes.
Thank you, Larry. As a result of our most recent grant cycle, we've selected the organizations you see represented on this slide as recipients of grants ranging from as little as $500 for the Northwest Housing Alternatives Subotnick to as much as $5,000 in support of the highly successful East Portland Expo, which is held in partnership with the Multicultural Share Fair in the summer. Without going into a lot of detail, in addition to the East Portland Expo and Multicultural Share Fair, there are a couple of transit-oriented projects, two community organizing projects, four farming and food-oriented projects, two refugee integration projects, an ongoing graffiti cleanup, and continued swimming lessons for underprivileged East Portland kids. All in all, a pretty wide range of deserving projects being championed by community activists and volunteers. In summary, we've selected 17 grantees from the total of 31 grant applications considered this time to receive a total of $54,300. As you can see from the slide, we have an estimated $350,000 in leveraged funds from the volunteer services, donated services, and physical items supplied by partners and supporters of the various projects. That 646% represents a very healthy return, again, on the grant dollars invested by the City of Portland under this program. We think that this also clearly indicates the value of the small-medium grants program in mobilizing and motivating community groups to get involved and to give their time, effort, and services for the betterment of all residents of East Portland. Thank you again, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, for your time this morning and your support of the East Portland Action Plan. We urge you to approve those previously budgeted grant awards today, and we look forward to presenting a more complete report on the entire East Portland Action Plan in March.
Well, thank you for that report, and John, it's good to see you. Thank you for your efforts as well. You're doing good work. Any other council discussion? Anyone signed up to testify on this matter? Anyone wishes to testify on this matter? Can you please call the vote for this emergency ordinance?
Well, thank you, John and Larry, for taking the time to come in. And thank you, Laura Wintergreen, for your absolutely fantastic staffing of this project. You exemplify support of community members rather than taking it over. That's a skill that's really needed, and I greatly appreciate your work. And for those who are interested, that they can contact the East Portland Neighborhood Office to get involved in any of these wonderful projects. We always need more volunteers, and it's an exciting time to be in East Portland and to have these projects going forward, building community at a time when the community most needs it. So thank you very much for your work. Aye.
Fish.
You know, this matter could very well have ended up on our consent agenda when we do grant awards like this. I'm delighted that Commissioner Fritz saw fit to put it on our regular agenda with a time certain so that we could get the briefing and all your good work, and we'd have a chance to say thank you for what you do for our community. Aye.
Bossman.
Well, thank you. This is tough work making decisions about grants when you have many more requests than you do have dollars, but it looks like you've done a good job here, and I think always the ability to leverage other resources is an important criterion, and it looks like you've done that and have leveraged quite a bit. So these look like good grants and very reflective, I think, of the diversity of the East Portland, of East Portland. So thank you for your work. Aye.
Leonard.
I think it's worth remembering that now Senator, then State Representative Jeff Merkley, pestered me to get the East Portland Action Plan process begun. I went to then Mayor Potter, who immediately embraced the idea. So it's particularly rewarding for me after having participated in the process from its inception to see it at the level that it is now, actually spending dollars to achieve actual results to improve the lives of people in East Portland. And we shouldn't forget Jeff Merkley's tenacious focus to make sure that this has happened. And remember to thank him whenever we see him out and about. And he still lives out in David Douglas, so he is out and about in the community quite a bit. So thank you for your good work in making this happen. Aye.
Adams.
Thanks. Onward. Aye. Thanks to Commissioner Fritz as well for oversight of getting this done well. Can you please read the